We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I love when I get the opportunity to talk with guys that I covered. You know, I covered the Bears for a really long time on a full-time basis. I am looking forward to going to Canton in August to see Brian Urlacher inducted into the Hall of Fame. One of the guys that I get a chance, usually like once a year, I get the opportunity to talk with Thomas Jones. And I love talking with Thomas because his career arc is amazing. You go from playing football and playing hard to then acting. And if you haven't been paying attention, he's in Straight Outta Compton. He's got a film out now called A Violent Man that is really, really good. We're going to get him on the phone in a minute. This segment being brought to you by Indeed.com. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. All right, so let's welcome in Thomas Jones, former Bears running back, played for a bunch of teams in the league, but feels a kinship with Chicago. And I think that that kinship is reflected in the way that fans relate to him. So Thomas, well, first of all, thank you very much for joining me on the show. I appreciate it. I'm going to start you off with something serious. I would love to know what your advice would be to this year's rookie class. If they brought you in and asked you to sit down and talk with them, what advice would you give them?
Take this very seriously. When I say take it very seriously, I mean their preparation. I would tell them to stay in their playbook, and I would tell them to stay in the film room. Those are two things. There's three things that keep you in the NFL: staying in your playbook, staying in the film room, and staying in the weight room. Those are three things that keep you in the NFL. And unfortunately, you know, some rookies come in and they don't understand. It's in college. It's you're not getting paid. So yeah, there's pressure, but there's more pressure for you to win, or pressure for you to get to the NFL. But there's no pressure when you've actually signed a contract, and now you have a whole city that's expecting you to come in and help that organization go to the Super Bowl immediately. They don't care that you're a 21-year-old kid that just finished eating pizza in a dorm, you know, and playing PlayStation or Xbox. They don't care about that. They want you to come in and help you win a Super Bowl. And as a rookie, I know when I went to the Arizona Cardinals, I really, you know, it was a tough situation for me because, you know, I was excited to be drafted where I was drafted, but I wasn't too excited about being in Phoenix just because it was so far away from home. I understood that, you know, they were in the NFC East, and but they were on Pacific time. They didn't really have, you know, at the time their record wasn't really that good. And, you know, I just wasn't really that excited about it. But, you know, and I took it as serious as I possibly could, but I didn't stay in the film room enough. I didn't stay in the weight room enough, and I didn't stay in my playbook enough. And on top of all the other elements that I had to deal with, you know, I wasn't as prepared as I should have been. And I learned those things over – I was fortunate enough to have a couple of years in the league to kind of get my feet wet and figure it out. But that's what I would tell these kids, man. Because if you don't know your plays, you can't play. They will not put you on the field. If you don't know what you're supposed to do, and if you don't know anybody's tendencies that you're playing against, you can't make the plays. Everybody's too good. You have to know people's tendencies so you can beat them to the punch. And if you're not strong enough and you can't keep either your weight up or your strength up, then physically you're going to get hurt, and then you can't play. Those are three things that will keep you off the field. I know it sounds like a lot, but that's what keeps you in the NFL.
I mean, that's pretty good advice. Talking with Thomas Jones, former Bears running back here on The Score, has built and forged a very successful acting career. Of course, you saw him in Straight Outta Compton. He's got a series coming up, a Marvel series coming up in June that we can't talk about, but he's going to be in it and be on it. What was the light clicked on for you that you needed to do these three things that you just broke down for us? What was the thing that tipped it in? You were like, okay, I understand now how to be a professional.
You mean as an NFL player or as an actor?
As an NFL player first, and then we could talk about being an actor.
As an NFL player, it was just, you know, I had sparks, you know, a couple of sparks in Arizona. At the time, I mean, it was just a very tough place to play for everybody involved, you know, not just me. It was tough for everyone. You know, we had a lot of, you know, we had a lot of issues, man, you know, just across the board with management, with players, you know, just we were playing outside where it was, you know, 120 degrees on the field. I mean, you know, we fly to the East Coast three times, you know, in the NFC. So we fly to the Giants, we fly to the Redskins, we fly to the Eagles. I mean, we leave on a Saturday, right? The game starts at 1 Eastern. It's 10 a.m. to us. So, you know, by the time we get to the second quarter, we're finally waking up. And by that time, we're getting beat by 3 touchdowns already, you know, like, There was just a lot of different elements that went into it. And I don't know. I really feel like once I was traded to Tampa, that's when I really felt like I was at an organization that at the time, because the Cardinals are now, they've been to the Super Bowl. I mean, it was when I left, it was like, wow, they started. I mean, they went to the Super Bowl. They built the stadium. But when I went to Tampa and I was in John Gruden, you know, my relationship with John Gruden was really important because they just won the Super Bowl and I was around guys that I was familiar with. It just kind of, at that time, it felt like I was in the NFL. Like, wow, you know, I'm playing with, you know, Warren Sapp and, you know, Keyshawn Johnson and John Lynch and Derek Brooks. Yeah, it just felt like these are the guys that I kind of watched and, you know, when I was in high school. And it's like, wow, this is what I thought the NFL was. And because the standard and the level of preparation John Gruden had, it forced you to know what you were doing. And plus, he specifically traded for me because he believed in me and believed in my ability. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, I showed up and I made the plays I needed to make. And the level of accountability was just incredible. I mean, even in a walkthrough, I mean, you go the wrong way in a walkthrough and Gruden is like jumping down your throat, man. I mean, you know, it was, by the time we got to the games, it was like, you know, we made it, you know, because the weeks in practice were just so tough. And that's what I was used to in college. And it just wasn't the same type of preparation in Arizona. It wasn't the same type of demand and the standard of, you know, preparation wasn't as high. We had some incredible players, incredible talent, incredible coaches. It's just that I don't think the collectively the standard of preparation was as high as it was in Tampa. And then from that point on, I didn't know anything else except for that level of preparation. And that's why I think I was able to play so long and play at a high level for so long.
I want to ask you about two of your Bears teammates. I'm going to start with Devin Hester. What was it like to watch Devin Hester?
It was like really watching a video game, man. It was like, I mean, I had one of my friends was really, really good in Madden, because Madden, I think, first came out my freshman year in college in 96. And one of my friends somehow, I don't know how, he like mastered the art of special teams. And he would always run around in circles and he'd find a way to score. And you're like, how did you? It's like a glitch in the game. It was like a glitch in the game, and you knew what he was going to do, and you still couldn't stop him. That's what it was like watching Devin. Devin literally just made people look stupid. I mean, and these are in humongous games, and as a rookie, you know, I mean, I think his rookie year was my third year in Chicago. We went to the Super Bowl, I think, 2006, I think that was that Devin's rookie year?
Yes.
Yeah, and I remember we played Green Bay at Green Bay, and he took the punt back. But what I really, really remember the most about him is how hard he practiced. I mean, he ran back every single punt to the end zone and kickoff. Guy practiced. I remember him and Brendan Amedeo and the whole special teams unit. Coach Tobe, I mean, the whole special teams and assistant coaches. I mean,
I'm really mad, TJ, that Dave Tobe doesn't have a head coaching job.
Yeah, Dave is incredible, man. Dave is an incredible coach. And special teams, you know, that's, you know, really the, you know, that's the heart and soul of your team. Because, you know, one punt return, one kickoff return, one forced fumble, you know, you pin somebody back in their own, you know, territory. I mean, it changed the whole complexion of the game. The whole complexion of the game. And the amount of pride that special teams had, Adrian Peterson, I mean, Jason McKee, and, you know, all the guys that were on special teams, Izzy. I mean, they were just, I mean, they took a lot of pride on that special teams, you know, on that special teams. And Devin, I mean, just watching the kid, I remember against the Rams, I'm like, what is going on? Like, this is the NFL. Like, you know, this isn't supposed to be happening.
The other
and, you know, obviously the Super, Bowl is like, what? You know, it's the opening kickoff. It's like, I don't know. He's a very special player, like very rare, first ballot Hall of Famer, hands down, arguably the best kick returner in the history of the NFL, arguably the best ever to line up and catch a punt or a kickoff return to ever do it.
I'm so happy that you said that, because it's weird, because to me, if you're having a Hall of Fame, you want the best of all the players. And how can you not look at what Hester did as a kick returner and go, that guy was the best that did it. He belongs in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, the guy took the opening kickoff of the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl. Usually guys have so many jitters. I mean, this is the first play of the biggest game of your life. And so many guys usually just have jitters. I mean, some guys are just like, oh, my God. They can't even believe before the kickoff. They're like, oh, my God, I'm in the Super Bowl. Like, the weird thing is you look in the middle of the field and you just see the NFL shield. There's no home team or away team. You know, you look in the end zone and there's the Colts on one end. You look in the other end zone, Bears in the other end. It's weird. It's like, this is really the Super Bowl. It's like, this is like the game I've been watching since I was a kid and dreaming about playing since I was a kid. And it's happening right now in real time. And this kid takes it back the opening kickoff of a game. Yeah, man, the guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, there's no question. Like, I don't know, man. I don't see how he's not, personally. I mean, and I'm not biased just because I play with him. If I was on another team, I would be like, oh, my God, got to play. You know, because I know at any moment he could change the game. The Arizona Cardinals game, he takes back the punt that we come back on Monday Night Football. I mean, countless plays. The Giants game, when he catches the kick, the field goal, that's on NBC. I mean, primetime football at the Meadowlands. Kids, the rookies, you know, he takes it 100-some yards. Yeah, man, come on. The thing is, human highlight reel, man.
Well, the other guy that I want to talk about is now a first ballot Hall of Famer, Brian Urlacher. So we've been talking with a lot of people leading up to him going into Canton in August about why he was so special. You got a chance to see it up close. Why was Brian Urlacher such a great player?
You know what? That is a good question. The weird thing about Lack is, me and Lack, we've known each other since college. We both made the Walter Camp All-American team, first team. You know, we made a lot of these same All-American teams, and we're like, it met at the College Football Awards in Orlando, and then we, you know, spent time together, just kind of moving around different All-American, first team All-American banquets. I was consensus All-American. I think he might have been a consensus All-American too, maybe. But we were everywhere. And during the draft, you know, I was 7 and he was 9. So, you know, and then we played in preseason. We played you guys. And I never saw him as a football player until he put his uniform on. I mean, one of the most lighthearted, nice, free-spirited, just happy. I mean, I never saw him as a football player. From the first time that I met him to the last time I saw him, I never saw him as a football player. And all of a sudden, he put the uniform on, and then he's like, he go from like being lack like that we knew to that we just joked around with and, you know, talked trash with and goofed around to lack, from lack to Brian Urlacher, like number 54, Urlacher on the back of his jersey, like chasing guys down, you know, knocking the crap out of linemen, slamming quarterbacks, slamming running backs, intercepting the ball, always in the right place. I mean, just instincts out of this world. It's super weird, man, because even to this day, like, I don't see him as a football player. I see him as Lack, like my boy. But then you watch him in the game, and it's like 6'4", 260, running a 4'4", and he's like a complete savage, stripping the ball. He just had like this, I don't know, man. He literally turned into another person during game day. Even in practice, man, he would like joke in practice. And, you know, of course, you know, we get serious sometimes depending on what was going on, but I never really saw him as a football player, man, until he put that uniform on in the games. And he literally turned into somebody else. It's, I mean, an intense, you could just see it in his eyes, his energy, tenacious, ferocious competitor, bro. Ferocious competitor. I mean, because in practice, I mean, obviously we practice against each other and we practice very hard. But I don't know, man. I mean, when he was selected as a finalist, you know, I started really lobbying for him hard on social media and stuff. Because it's my brother, you know, it's a football player, you know, Brian and Chase, you know, they're my family, they're my brothers, you know. And I started looking at some of the highlights and sharing some of the highlight reels that people made. And I was looking at some of that stuff and I was like, wow, you know, this guy's been, he was making plays from the time he stepped foot in the NFL to the time he stopped. I mean, it was just nonstop chaos. So I'm so happy for him, man. He deserves it. He's the epitome of a Hall of Famer from top to bottom, off the field, on the field, done so much for Chicago, made a lot of Chicago Bears fans happy to watch him play every Sunday. I'm just excited for him, man. If anyone deserves to be in the Hall of Fame and be a first ballot Hall of Famer, it's Brian Urlacher, hands down, period. And he's in my class, and I'm proud that he's, you know, we have someone from our class that's going to the Hall of Fame, too.
That's a great, great thing and a great way to look at it. Thomas Jones, check out his movie, A Violent Man. If you want to check it out, 2018.miamifilmfestival.com. You could take a look at the trailer and see what Thomas is up to. I ask you this all the time, and I've already kept you too long, but I have to ask this again. Your impact on the Bears as an organization with the fans, I think, is really incredible because it's not like you were here for 10 years, but people always kind of harken back to, man, I love the way that Thomas Jones played the game. Even now, knowing that you played in a bunch of different places, what does it mean to you to know that you had that type of impact on this fan base?
Man, it's unbelievable. Like you said, you know, I feel like I played there longer than I did, and I did not want to leave. And I think that's kind of like, it's kind of like the girlfriend you never got over, you know? You know, when I think of Chicago, it's kind of like, yeah, I don't know. It's like I said, it's like the one girlfriend that you loved more than anybody, but it just didn't, for some reason, didn't work out, but you always loved that person. I mean, playing with Chicago was like the highlight of my career, man. I mean, to go to the Super Bowl with Chicago Bears, you know, playing running back, the same position Walter Payton played, someone that I, as a kid, would literally, I had his shoes, his kangaroo shoes, playing at Soldier Field. I mean, going to Gibson's after the games, the love that the city showed us. No matter where you went in Chicago, they loved you win or lose, supported you win or lose. The atmosphere, man, when you would come into that stadium, the couple years that we had, you know, obviously the first year there in 04 was a little tough when we were rebuilding. But then in 05, when we went to the playoffs, because that was my first playoff game against the Panthers in 05. And I just remember coming out of that tunnel, and I was like, you know, you see all the Fox signs everywhere and the cameras and the towels. And I'm like, man, this is so crazy. I went from, like, this disastrous experience in Arizona to being the starting running back for Chicago Bears against the Carolina Panthers in the playoffs at Soldier Field. I mean, and not to mention the NFC Championship game. Like, I mean, Chicago was, I mean, will always be special to me, the Chicago Bears fan base. Will always be special to me. Chicago Bears organization will always be special to me, despite how things ended. I understood it was just business, and I didn't take it personal. Everyone else that was on those teams are will always be special to me. Even Cedric Benson, you know, we pushed each other. We pushed each other to the limit, and that's why we were so good, because the competition was so high on the teams that we had, and we pushed each other, made each other better, made the team better. And I'm just, you know, one of the biggest regret that I had in my entire football career is not winning that Super Bowl. And it haunts me every year around the playoffs, to the point where I don't even watch the playoffs. I can't really watch it, and I definitely don't watch the Super Bowl. It's pretty sad because, you know, I'm still a football fan, but I don't really watch it as much just because I'm busy and I'm acting and doing this other thing. But that losing that Super Bowl is – you know, it's the biggest heartbreak that I've ever had. And, you know, it was crazy after the game. I remember looking at Jason McKee, and I was just like, man, we're down five or something like that. We're driving, and we had the turnover, and they scored. Because in my mind, I'm like, oh, my God, we're going to come back, and we're going to come from behind and win the Super Bowl. And then it just completely turned around. And I just remember the confetti dropping on us, and they pulling the ropes out, and, you know, and they bringing out the bleachers and the stands and the coats. And it was just surreal. I was like, we didn't win. We didn't win the Super Bowl. Like, it took me a long time. And then what was even crazy is that I didn't even get a chance to go back and, you know, see my teammates anymore. You know, I didn't get a chance to go back. I didn't, you know, they sent me my NFC Championship ring. I didn't get a chance to go back. I've never been back to Halas Hall ever since. The last time I was at Halas Hall was right before we got on the plane to fly to the Super Bowl.
Wow.
So, you know, but, I mean, it was just an incredible experience, man. You know, to all the Chicago Bears fans, I really appreciate all the love you all show me, even on social media. There's a Mama Bear. Her name's Mama Bear. She has a Twitter page, Mama Bear. I think it's the Bears brothers. I don't want to leave you by it. There's so many people that I'm constantly in connection with. I don't even know what they look like, but I feel like I know them and they know me. And, you know, I appreciate everyone from Chicago that supports me, supports my new career. I'm a working actor. I've got a lot of things going on, a lot of projects. I'd appreciate your support to watch it and support it. But yeah, man. Chicago will always have a special place in my heart. Every time I think of Chicago, man, I think of the Bears. I think of Gibson's after the games. I think of all the, you know, the people that the Bears organization, T-Med, Hyde in the equipment room. I'm going like down memory lane, man. beautiful, man. Chicago Bowl, to play in Chicago, man, there's nothing like playing for Chicago Bears, man. That's like it's unbelievable. And I think that's why it hurts me so much that we didn't win. Because, you know, to have that parade down Michigan Avenue would have been like, and I replay it over and over in my mind as the playoffs come out every year. And it sucks, man. It sucks because, you know, we cannot do anything about it. And, but at least I'm just glad that I was there long enough to perform and, you know, leave a lasting impression with the Bears fans. And I love them just as much as they love me. So I'll leave it at that.
TJ, that's a great place to leave it, man. You're always great. I'm looking forward to every time I see you, man, doing stuff. I'm like, that dude is working. And I appreciate that the grind that you showed on the football field is exactly what you're doing and acting. And I'm jacked up that you're going to be part of Marvel. I'll just leave it at that. I'm jacked up about it. And when it happens and it's official,
we'll be on the phone.
That's what I'm talking about. TJ, man, thanks. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, brother. Talk soon.
That's Thomas Jones. I love that dude. He's the best. Back after this on The Score. Julie, thank you very much. Thanks, everyone, who checked out the Thomas Jones interview. If you missed it or missed the portion of it, it'll be up on 670thescore.com/Lawrence Holmes Show later on tonight. I always love when he's on the show. Now, listen, Thomas isn't on the line now, so I can tell you some stuff that he didn't want me to tell you. If you watch Luke Cage, you probably saw a little bit of Thomas Jones last year. From what I hear, you're going to see a lot more of Thomas Jones. Shh. All right. So when you see Comanche on Luke Cage this year, you heard it here first, but shh, don't tell anyone, okay? Coming up on the show, we're going to do some baseball. We're going to talk with Joe Ostrowski, our weekly Hit with Joe, one of the hosts of Hit and Run, which is always great. And I want to specifically talk about Yu Darvish a little bit later on. There was some incredible baseball content on The Score earlier today that has to do with Yu Darvish. Jed Hoyer was on, and Mully and Hanley asked him some really good questions about Darvish in particular. Same thing with Ozzie Guillen. Ozzie was on, and they actually took a question that Ozzie had answered and brought it to Jed, and I think you'll be surprised what Jed had to say about it. We'll do that later on. We're going to stick with the Bears for now. Dan Shonka of Our Lads is going to break down with me the draft, what you should or should not be excited about. And I spent most of the morning watching Bears tape today. Most of the morning watching the draft picks, listening to interviews. I've got some nuggets that I want to share and some stuff that I saw with Anthony Miller that I think is going to get you excited. We'll do that next here on The Score. Glad that you're hanging out. My name is Lawrence Holmes here with you until 10 o'clock. Talking a little bit about the Bears draft. I got some Cubs stuff that I want to do starting at 8 o'clock. So if you're a baseball fan, stick around. If you're a Bears fan, we got something for you right now. Dan Shonka does an unbelievable job scouting for the Our Lad subscription service. You can check it out and all of their cool stuff, ourlads.com. And the draft guide, I love when I get this because it's so detailed. And he knows, this is someone who scouted in the league for a really long time, for Philadelphia, for Washington, for Kansas City. And now you get the benefit of his expertise, and I'm glad that he's here on The Score. Dan, thanks so much for joining me tonight. I appreciate it.
You betcha. No, with the smoke kind of clearing through the draft, it's, you know, after looking at these guys for about a year, we're ready to, you know, we saw where these guys landed, and, you know, we think the Bears did an excellent job.
Why do you think the Bears did an excellent job in the draft?
Well, you know, they got arguably the best linebacker, you know, and then in Rokan Smith, and, you know, Anthony Miller is people in the league really like him. I think maybe some of the draft pundits don't really know how good this guy is, but he's a terrific football player. And then a guy like James Daniels, who is a solid center, but he can also play either guard. And so when you that's, to me, that's three starters right there. And a real sleeper on the Bears squad is Bilal Nichols out of Delaware. We had him in the East West down there, and this guy is full grown. He's a man now. I mean, he looks part, and actually, you know, he's a fifth round pick, but he was actually more athletic and things than, you know, another guy about his same size out of Fort Hays, Shepherd. So I think that, you know, that was a real steal there. And of course, Kyle Fitz, if he stays healthy, was a big time pass rusher, and Wims from Georgia, it will add depth to the receiving corps. So, you know, there's not much there that we can shoot holes in.
When I looked at Nichols on tape, and you start to look at the measurements, he doesn't measure like an inside defensive lineman. He looks like a guy that you would put on the outside. Was he 6'3 and a half and 305? Like, he seems very long to play in the middle, and I'm wondering
How do you feel like that will manifest at the NFL level?
He's a multi-purpose defensive lineman. He's a guy that can play all across that front, whether it's the defensive end spot or the shade nose tackle. And so that's the thing that I really liked about him, is he can play all along the defensive front. And any of those guys that are that versatile, you know, their stock really goes up. And, you know, he's got obviously the measurables with those long arms and big hands, and his quick get off, his 10 was around 173, which is really good, explosive. Put it up, put 225 up 29 times. And we grade these guys athletically at the combine by position, and he was the sixth most athletic defensive lineman at the combine. So I tell you what, that's pretty darn good.
I want to talk about Anthony Miller. I spent a lot of time today and over the last few days, like, really looking through. And it's funny because I spent during the fall on Friday nights, I would end up watching a lot of Memphis football just because it would be the game that was on. And I was intrigued by Riley Ferguson because he's this long, lanky dude that could really spin the football. And there you would see Anthony Miller pop up game after game. My assessment, and I am an amateur at this, you are the pro, but my assessment is that he plays bigger than he's listed. When I watch Anthony Miller, I see a guy who's shorter than 6 feet, but he's tough off the line of scrimmage. He seems willing to engage defensive backs, and he wins battles for the ball in the red zone. He's a tough, tough dude.
Yeah, he's got the eye of the tiger. You know, a former walk-on, guy that's hungry, had to earn his scholarship there. And guys like that, you absolutely love to have on your team. When I was with the Eagles, I signed a free agent receiver, James Thrash, out of Missouri Southern, and he ended up playing 15 years, and he's an executive in the NFL office. So those guys that walk on to plays or come from small schools, hey, they're hungry to succeed, and Anthony Miller is one of those kind of guys.
What do you like about him as far as his catching ability?
I'll tell you what, he's got great hands, his quickness. You know, the thing that when he gets his hands on the ball, he can make something happen. And he's got a lot of grit to him. You know, he'll put his nose in there to block. And but what he does a real nice, and it's too bad he didn't get a chance to play in the Senior Bowl, but he had a little injury there. But, I mean, he can set defensive backs up and stutter step them, get around, and he tracks the ball so well, catching, like you were talking about earlier, catching in the crowd. Somebody's there, man, here's a guy that, well, and those 50-50 balls, they're really like 80-20 balls when he gets up there and catches the ball. So he's really a multiple-purpose guy. He can play on the outside. He can play in the slot. You know, he moved all over there at Memphis, so. Very productive guy like that. And I think that every time, now, you know, whether he's play side or his backside, he's going to give you 100% and will sell routes. And so he's a very good route runner, you know. So there's a lot of good things going for Anthony Miller.
Dan Shanka of Our Lad Scouting Services joining me here on The Score. Roquan Smith was you guys' number one rated linebacker, and it was kind of a drop to the next guy from a grading standpoint. What set him apart from other linebackers that you saw?
Well, I guess you could call him the new wave linebacker that everybody's looking for now. I mean, he was right there with Tremaine Edmonds, and it was kind of a, you know, Edmonds was from Virginia Tech and went in the first round to Buffalo. And Roquan, his explosiveness kind of set him apart a little bit from Edmonds. Edmonds is a bigger, really big guy that could run well too. But Smith is, you know, low 4.5 guy. And he's got really good instincts. And he is a sideline-to-sideline linebacker. He's probably a faster, and I, you know, this is a lot when you say a Hall of Fame player, but, you know, maybe a faster Mike Singletary, you know. I mean, he's actually a little taller than Mike, about the same size, thickness and everything. And when Mike came out of Baylor, he was in the third round. But, anyway, Smith is just any complaint coverage. You can either match up those backs coming out of the backfield. He can lock up, and that's what you want nowadays in the NFL defense, because the base offense is three wide receivers. Well, a lot of teams' base defense is a 4-2-5. So you got to have a guy that can stay on the field and in all situations and be able to cover, and that's what Smith can do.
You talked about how you like the Bears draft this year. Would it be fair to say that this year's draft was a little bit of a shift for Ryan Pace, where it looked like he was looking for more production out of those players versus those guys necessarily being projects?
Yeah, I think what it does, first of all, they are all productive, like you said. And the thing is that you're creating competition and you're plugging holes with productive players that not only the Bears, but a lot of people in the league really coveted, because I talked to a lot of scouts and things at the East-West when I was down there in the combine thing. Of course, you know, I mean, we basically had those three top guys, Smith, Daniels, and Miller, in the first round. I mean, they were right on the cusp of, hey, if you got them late in the first round, you couldn't argue about it. And two of those guys, Miller and Daniels, went in the second round. And Smith, you know, went early there in the first round. So if you could come out of a draft with three starters, I mean, that's outstanding. Then bring a rotate guy in like Nichols, or a situation pass rusher like Fitz, who was really good at Utah and did that thing. And Wims, he's definitely an ascending wide receiver. So that's not only going to bring competition, but also a guy that I think eventually will be in a rotation.
It seems like the one guy that they, I don't want to say reach for, but I thought was an interesting and worthy project, was EA Buniwe from Western Kentucky. This guy has got off the chart smarts, wants to be a doctor when he's done playing football. What type of player was he at Western Kentucky?
Well, the thing is, he was somebody that, say, wasn't a star, but really just consistent and could play up and down line scrimmage. He got pretty good speed, and he did, you know, a lot of good things there, but you didn't have a big book on him. You know, I mean, he was a guy that what you like to do is see players that play 3 or 4 years, like Anthony Miller, you know. Now, Daniels came out a year early, but he was playing actually when he was a freshman at Iowa, got some playing time, and, you know, it was a little solid starter for 2 years, and, or Smith. So I think the thing is, Joel Ubeke is a guy that's going to compete for special teams right now. And then with Floyd there, Nacho, and some of those guys, Kowalkowski, you know, he's going to have his work cut out, but his role may be that of a special team player.
Dan, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining me.
You betcha. Anytime. Thank you.
Dan Shonka of Our Lads, their scouting service. I highly recommend it. It's one of the things I use to try and get myself prepared after the draft. Like, I like to go back. I spent a lot of time looking at tape today. By the way, I don't ordinarily say this, but shout out to the Bears. If you check out the Bears website, they actually made their scouts available to talk about the prospects, which I thought was a very cool way to look at the players. Like, Jeff Joniak talked with the scouts, and it was cool to see, you know, Breck Ackley and Sam Somerville and Scott Hamill, them talking about the players and what they thought was interesting. Here's something. Joel EA Buniwe out of Western Kentucky, the fourth round pick. He gets drafted. He goes to class Monday. So I threw it out on Twitter earlier today. If you were him, let's not say you're him, because he wants to be a doctor, so obviously he's going to class. If you were a player that got drafted in the fourth round of the NFL, now you're not guaranteed of making a team, but you're in pretty good shape of making a team. Would you go to class on Monday? See, my thing is, unless it was the final, I don't know if I would go. So I threw it out, and about 1,000 people voted. 40% of you said yes, you would go to class on Monday. I feel like that's a I would take the day off.
It's the flex, though. It's like, I don't have to be here if I don't want to.
Oh, I see what you're saying,
but I
Tony.
Am here.
So he walks into class and is like, dude, I saw you get drafted yesterday or 2 days ago. Oh, man, I can't believe you. Okay, I see you, Tony. I like that.
It's kind of like when you wear something nice and you feel like enough people haven't seen you. So, you know, let's go walk around the block or rock around the yard for a couple more times.
Yeah.
More people need to see me.
Okay. That actually makes a lot of sense. Joel E.A. Booneyway flexing on the campus of what? Where is that? In Bowling Green? Bowling Green, Kentucky? I like it. I like that idea. We'll switch over to baseball. If you want to know what's up with you, Darvish, we're going to talk about it with one of the hosts of Hit and Run next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.